Welcome back to another episode of the Mac Rumors Show. It's been a crazy week, Hartley. Good to have you back in your home country. I know you were traveling around the U.S. for a little bit. Did you have fun out here?
I did. I always have fun in the U.S., but things have been pretty intense since I got back.
Yeah.
Plenty of new products. It's been a full-on week. Normally, we complain that there's not enough news, and
no, I think this week
there's been too much to keep up with. But it's refreshing.
Well, there was a plethora of new products that were announced, which honestly, though, most of them, it's going to be interesting to see who exactly is excited about it. Feel free to reach out to us, podcast@macrumors.com. You can send us a little email or, you know, respond to the comments, whatever is easier for you. But would love to know what you guys are picking up from this week, if anything. I see a lot of comments are just like boring and people are over it and there's nothing there. And it's like, just got to have to look, take a step back and realize that they're just keeping them refreshed so that people who are in the market for this might actually get it. You're not obviously going to be upgrading all of your devices every year. With that said, Monday started off with a bang. So we got the iPhone 17e and the iPad Air. Interesting products that are being lumped together, I guess. You know, they could have done like a budget day. Oh, I guess they're all kind of budget-ish products for the most part. But yeah, the iPhone 17e came out. It was pretty much exactly like what we thought it was going to be. Although, and I said this in my video, did you know that this was going to be getting ceramic shield, or did no one care? I guess it makes sense because it's in 17 lineup, but that was not a rumor that I saw all the time.
No, it wasn't a rumor, but it makes sense.
Sure.
But it's a very small upgrade overall, but it is worthwhile. The biggest change, I think there are two changes that are significant, which is the increase of base storage. So you get 100% more storage going from 128 last year up to 256, and that is for the same price. And considering that this is a budget phone, that makes a huge difference, and there are plenty of people that will really appreciate that. And if you are a customer for this phone and you're looking to save money, I think that's massive, actually, that you can store so much extra content on your device and have that extra headroom. I think that's a great upgrade. And the other one is MagSafe, which definitely held back the iPhone 16e a little bit and was the source of a lot of criticism. And I know you can, you know, slap a magnetic ring on the back of your case or whatever and kind of make it work, but people really want those firmer magnets built in. So it was nice to see that. I think probably this device will be more popular than the iPhone 16e as a result.
Yeah, and it has Qi 2 charging, which did last year's have that? I know it had wireless charging, but I don't remember if it was Qi 2 certified.
No, because to have Qi 2, right, it needs to have the magnetic alignment.
Right.
And also as a result, the wireless charging speed has doubled from 7.5 watts to 15 watts. So while you're not getting anything crazy here, this is an entry-level iPhone, so we're not really expecting to get any breakthrough features on this device. This is stuff we've seen before, but it's still an incredibly important device because for a lot of people, this will be their first iPhone. And if it's not their first iPhone, people that are likely to buy this sort of iPhone are likely to keep it for a long time. It was nice to see that.
Yeah, and I honestly think my two biggest upgrades personally, I mean, having the 256 now being the, or 256 is the starting, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so having that being the starting, it's kind of like if you, like, you know, people call it girl math, but if you guy math it, it's kind of like, well, think of it as $100 off, basically, because you got it for free. Otherwise, last year, people who had to buy it had to upgrade for another, you know, $50 to $100, whatever the breakdown is, usually $100. So that's nice. It's always good to have more storage. And my favorite thing is obviously MagSafe, but also having Ceramic Shield too, because I don't use a screen protector anymore with any of these new iPhones because of how good it is. I'm not going to keep saying it. We'll just leave it at that. It is very well worth it to not have to worry about your phone getting a bunch of micro scratches. If you're worried about dropping it and cracking it, then that's different. But I don't typically drop it. I just usually get a bunch of scratches just from things in my pocket. And so haven't had to worry about that. That's a huge upgrade from a durability standpoint. I'd still recommend probably the iPhone 17 as the best iPhone for the money, but this one is really just a close second now. It's got everything you need. You don't have the better display with ProMotion, and you don't have the extra camera. Otherwise, for the most part, I think most people would find it to be pretty equal in what you're getting. I mean, I don't think anyone's really going to point to the things that you might be lacking as a major, you know, deal breaker. I can't even think off the top of my head what normal person would want, you know, from what you're getting from the 17 down to the 17e.
I think that also, at the end of the day, this is an iPhone that is for a bit of a different market. I feel like the iPhone 17 is more for those people who are a little bit more upgrade conscious and more likely to want a slightly wider array of features, people who are more likely to care about Dynamic Island, people who are even likely to even know what Dynamic Island is, understand what a refresh rate is on a display. And there is a good chunk of average customers that do notice those kinds of things, but maybe don't need a pro model. The iPhone 17e and the 16e as well is really not for that kind of person. It's for the person who is getting an iPhone for the very first time, is on a strict budget, as maybe switching from a much older device as well. You know, maybe you're coming from an iPhone 11 or an iPhone 12. If that's the case, this still is a pretty substantial upgrade, and would be a better device in virtually every way other than just missing that ultra-wide camera. But every other specification is better. So it's really providing an entry-level device for those customers more than it is trying to present an alternative option alongside the iPhone 17 itself, I think.
Yeah, I mean, totally agree. So that is the iPhone 17e. That was the first thing that was announced alongside the iPad Air. And we can probably keep this one pretty short because the iPad Air gets the M4 chip. And that's really it. I haven't even looked. I honestly gave it, I'll be completely transparent with you, I have given it zero time, unfortunately, because there was just other things that came out that were a little bit more important. Did it get the same kind of pricing and storage increase as everybody else?
So there was no storage or pricing increase. There were no changes to that. But the only other thing that was significant is it's got 50% more memory now. So you've got 12 gigabytes of memory, which should make a difference for multitasking, for local machine learning and AI tasks. You also have the N1 chip on there. And if you get a cellular model, you get a C1X chip, which should obviously be more efficient. But no one, even if you have an M1 or M2 iPad Pro, iPad Air, let alone an M3, is going to be buying this to upgrade. This really is a little bit similar to the iPhone 17e, but even more vividly, perhaps, is a device for people who are coming from something much older. Like if you've got an A14 iPad Air and it's time to buy a new one, or maybe even an iPad that's older than that, and you find that you need something a little bit more than the entry-level iPad, something that will maybe be more capable of replacing a computer, or you want to do a little bit more with, even if you want that properly laminated display, this is the best iPad to do that with. But overall, it's a very small change. We've got no new color options. Even Apple's using the same wallpapers to promote this product. It's really not even trying to go out of its way to make it clear that this is that different. This is pretty much just a background spec bump and is another indication, I think, of why some of these products this week have been released in press releases rather than at an event, because what would there have been to say about this product?
Right. You can kind of do that in passing with the MacBook Air, which was on day two. Tuesday was all about the Mac, mostly the pro-ish workflow, but we did get a MacBook Air. This one gets the M5 chip. Now, you do have a 512 gig base storage, but it is $100 more now. So you're not getting that for free like you did on the iPhone 17e, where it jumped up in storage, but you didn't change the price. It still remains at $599. Now the MacBook Air starts at $1099, which is obviously $100 more. And there is a reason for this, but we'll get to it. Actually, we'll get to it a little bit later. But there's a whole bunch of reasons why things are going up in price. I know a lot of people talked about, it's not going to go up. And then Apple literally said it was going to go up. But like, at least you're getting something for it. you kind of offset a lot of the crazy component prices that are going on right now. RAM is at like an insane all-time high. And you got a free upgrade in RAM on the Mac, on the iPad Air, which is pretty wild. In the MacBook Air, you're getting a little bit more storage for that $100 offset. It's fine. It's no longer sub 1,000, which is kind of crazy because the MacBook Air has been like that for a while. But you are getting the M5. You are getting 512 gigs to start. You get the N1 for the Wi-Fi 7 capability and Bluetooth 6. And yeah, the dynamic power adapter. That's what comes in the box.
Yes.
That's cool.
Although not in the UK and the EU, where you now receive no power adapter. But in the US, you do get that newer dynamic power adapter that can go from 40 watts up to 60 for a brief period of time. I think
its colors remain the same.
Yeah, pretty much everything else remains the same. But I do think this is a more exciting upgrade than the iPad Air, because a lot of people do care about the MacBook Air and will use this as their main computer and will use to get a lot of work done. And especially where people are experimenting more and more with on-device AI tools, the M5 chip does matter for that, where you've got those neural accelerators on each GPU core. It is substantially more powerful than the M4. And if you were holding off on buying a MacBook Air maybe a couple of years, this is a pretty decent performance bump that probably will be worth it, even if you do some light video editing or slightly more intense workflows. And I think it's clear now as well with the introduction of the other new interesting product that we will get to. The MacBook Air is the middle of the road MacBook now. This is not the entry level MacBook. And so this is a product that people will use to do things and get work done. And the M5 matters with that.
Hey guys, just want to take a quick minute to talk about today's sponsor, SelectQuote. If you're like me, there are probably a few things you probably wished you jumped on earlier, like maybe learning to write code in your free time in college instead of messing around, maybe buying Bitcoin when it was worth pennies, or grabbing a few shares of Nvidia before it exploded. Our generation is basically the FOMO generation. But the one thing you don't want to miss out on is protecting your future. And the good news is it can cost about the same per month as one of your streaming services. That is why it's worth checking out life insurance with SelectQuote. If you're new to life insurance, you're definitely not alone. Thankfully, I found SelectQuote. For over 40 years, SelectQuote has helped more than 2 million Americans understand their options and get the coverage they need, with over $700 billion in coverage and counting. As a broker, their mission is simple. They find you the right insurance policy at the best possible price. And SelectQuote takes the guesswork out of finding the right life insurance policy. Instead of sorting through dozens of confusing options on your own, one of their licensed agents will do all that for you. Compare the plans from trusted, top-rated insurance companies to find a policy that fits your health, your lifestyle, and your budget. And the best part is they work for you for free. You can get covered faster than you might expect. SelectQuote works with providers who offer same-day coverage for up to $2 million with no medical exam required. Life insurance is never cheaper than it is today. So get the right life insurance for you for less and save more than 50% at selectquote.com/MacRumors. Save more than 50% on term life insurance at selectquote.com/MacRumors today to get started. That is selectquote.com/MacRumors. Thanks, SelectQuote, for sponsoring this episode. And then we got the MacBook Pro, which... pretty much the same thing as the MacBook Air, but it does introduce brand new chips. So that is a little bit more important to talk about. We have the M5 Pro and the M5 Max. Although, is it really that important? It's just, guys, it's more powerful than what we had last year. It's the most powerful MacBook you can get. You know, Apple claims 30% here, 40%. It's, no one's going to be able to tell. Just know that it's going to work better for those who need it. If you need a ton of GPU power and more CPU power, I mean, that's what you're going to get. And so we'll be doing tests and everything, but I don't know. There's nothing really here that sticks out at me. You do get a twice as fast SSD. That you should be able to notice a little bit. That's interesting. But otherwise, the price go up here too? I'm guessing so.
I don't believe so.
Okay. Well, see, that's the other thing. Didn't even check. You are getting less, though. Hold on. Here's the other thing that I need to mention. Ordering online now, I do not like this way that Apple does it. Did you notice that it's changed recently?
With what?
When you configure a Mac, it's no longer like three or four different like set configurations.
I see. Yeah, you just configure it from the base model.
Yeah, I don't like that because like before it was easier for me to follow what models would be in stock for pickup and which ones would be kind of dubbed as a customized model. Because when you're trying to get them quickly and on launch day for like people like us, I usually try to get like the highest end configured one that doesn't require me to like build a custom model. And it was really hard. Also, I was doing this at the event. It was really hard for me to like do all of this and focus on, okay, what's the most that I can get configured already that'll be available on launch day. But I will say the price that I paid last year for the M4 Max was $36.99 or $35, somewhere around there. And I got more RAM than what I got for the same price for this one this year. I believe it was 64 to 48. I didn't fully look. Again, I was at the event. It was crazy trying to do all this at the same time. But is that something that you've noticed at all?
I can't say I have. I mean, I don't purchase new devices on such a regular like, basis as you do, because of course you need them for video.
Right.
But I do think that it gets a little confusing when configuring devices with this many options. But obviously when yeah. you're shelling out this much money, it gets more important to be able to push that as far as you can or as far as you want to. I do think that this starts to get into the territory where it probably is worth some M1 users upgrading. You know, if you had a fully loaded M1 Max MacBook Pro and you are starting to find that to struggle a little bit with your workflows, this would be a very appealing machine. As I say, especially with M2, the M5.
We're starting to get...
Yeah. It all depends what your workflow is. But especially with on-device AI, there's no denying that the M5 generation of chips is the first family of Apple Silicon that Apple has properly optimized for those sorts of tasks. And Apple Silicon's always been very capable with its neural engine, but especially so with the M5 generation and those added neural accelerators, which should make a big difference. And that is something that people are doing more and more, especially on a MacBook Pro. It'll be interesting to see when these chips come to the Mac Mini and the Mac Studio, because those devices are also the sorts of things that people use local AI tools on, especially the Mac Mini. That's become a very popular device because you can just leave it plugged in to do its thing in the background. So this chip upgrade does matter. The thing for me that kind of hangs over this is, of course, in the rumor community, we know that there is another MacBook Pro coming later this year that will be fully redesigned and have the M6 Pro and M6 Max. And that will be, I mean, within probably about maybe 8 or 9 months. So
yeah,
I would strongly encourage customers of the MacBook Pro, unless they really need this machine right now, if they can possibly wait another 8 or 9 months, I think it would be worthwhile waiting. But of course, there will be people that just need something right now. I mean, if I was to, I don't know, drop my MacBook Pro and break it right now, I would be walking into an Apple store and buying an M5 Pro model. So there will always be those kinds of people. But barring those kind of situations, if you can hold off another 8 months, I think that's probably wise.
Absolutely. I fully agree. Here, real quick, let me go through this because it has changed and it's kind of, I don't know. So my price last year was $36.99. I got a 16-core CPU and a 40-core GPU, which I believe was an upgrade there. So that was one of the like max configurations for that. You get 48 gigs of unified memory and 1 terabyte of storage. For $35.99, so it's $100 cheaper, this is the highest configuration that you can get right now for launch day, it seems, because this is without me making any changes. You get an 18-core CPU, a 32-core GPU, so you can't bump up to 40. I mean, you can, but just for this price, to keep it in the same price point. And it gives you 36 gigs of RAM, not 48, but you get 2 terabytes of storage off rip because they kind of gave you that more. Now there's no 1 terabyte option anymore, so that's increased. Okay, so that's good, I guess, but that kind of sucks if I'm trying to get the same configuration for a similar price. Now, if I wanted to get it close, if I hit the upgrade for 18-core to 40-core, to match, it automatically bumps you up to 48 gigs of RAM. So everything's tied here. It's the same, and I get the extra, you know, terabyte of storage. It's $4,099. So it's like $400 more almost. That's wild. And I'm not sure why. And that, of course, pushes things back. So, like, I don't know why they made these changes, but I don't really like that.
I mean, quite honestly, I don't know that I would have noticed that. Because most people are not buying generation over generation MacBook Pros. Most people, that even if you are a power user and you are buying one of these machines, you're probably doing that 3 or 4 or 5 years apart. And you probably aren't going to remember what you spent in the first place. And also,
I'm just letting you know, you're getting ripped off.
These machines are bought a lot by businesses as well. So they're not going to notice that kind of thing.
Here you go. Breaking news. You're getting ripped off by $400 if you want something close to what I got last year. So hopefully that's worth it. So I just went down, basically, I went down in RAM by a pretty significant amount. I mean, that's 16 gigs. It's nothing to sneeze at. Like, that's a whole laptop. That's a whole MacBook Air, right?
Yeah.
From a RAM perspective. And then, you know, I'm losing out on 8 cores of GPU power, but you do get an increase in CPU just because that's the upgrade this year from the N5 alone. Yeah, I don't know. It's not really that big of a deal. I would rather have the higher storage, to be honest, because I'm already running out. All right. So I don't know. The M5 Pro and Max, it's whatever. It's going to be powerful. The biggest thing on day two for me was the studio display. This is where people were kind of pissed from the standard studio display perspective. The entry-level model is not really an upgrade. I mean, yeah, you're getting 2 Thunderbolt 5 ports. You're getting improved speakers with apparently 30% deeper bass. And guys, I didn't even buy one. I'm not even going to test this. So, because it's not a worthy upgrade in my opinion. And you do get a camera with desk view, and it has an A19 chip. We still don't really know what these chips do. I mean, we do know what they do, but like, are they really that important to the whole thing? I guess, I don't know. Could they be doing more is my wonder. Like, could they be driving more? I don't know, but yeah, that's it. That's all you get on the stand, and it's $1,599 still. That's insane to me.
I mean, this is the ultimate example of this theme that we've been talking about, where this is simply for people that are buying a new one, people that maybe don't have a studio display, maybe people that have broken their existing one. I mean, I have a studio display that I'm using right now. There is no way I'm going to sell this and buy another one, because there would functionally be no difference. I would notice no difference in display quality. The panel is exactly the same. But I understand why they did this, because the A13 Bionic chip that is used in the studio display, that was already quite old when that debuted in 2022. And I doubt that it's even in production anymore at all. So Apple is far more likely to use a chip that is actively in production and therefore cheaper, but also provides them with the headroom for the future, because the current studio display was on sale for 4 years. Before this model has come out. That means that this one could take us through to the end of the decade. By the end of the decade, the A19 chip is going to be quite old. So to be able to go through successive software updates, maybe add capabilities, and just keep everything running in the expected manner in connection with future Macs that are a long way off, I understand why it's just a better bet to put that chip in there. But it is a bit of a shame that there was not a little bit more to talk about with this. It feels like a bit of a stretch to be talking about the, you know, just a slightly better speakers. Or, I mean, I do care about the Thunderbolt port, I will say, because
sure,
it annoyed me with my studio display that I could not daisy chain it, even if I wanted to. And when I've wanted to connect multiple Thunderbolt peripherals, I have to use a Thunderbolt hub, which is frustrating. If I just want to hook up a Thunderbolt drive, I either have to plug it directly into my Mac or the hub, and I can't plug it into the back of my studio display. So that is a nice
feature.
Now you
can do three of them. Yeah.
So that does make a difference, but I don't know. I don't think I've ever used Desk View. I don't think I probably ever will.
Yeah, Apple's obsession with Desk View and really making that a proponent of all the like devices that have it for marketing material. Do people really use it that much? Like, they use it a lot with briefings and stuff, because they'll show, you know, but that I don't know. That's like a feature that they made for themselves that they really like, so they keep pushing it off.
It's a cool feature, but I don't know.
It is, yeah.
Maybe in certain professions where you are showing, physical models or illustrations or something, and you need to actually show that with your hands, maybe it's useful for those kind of people, but...
I'm going to film all of my unboxing videos with the webcam and just use the desk view for when it comes time to show the product. I think it's going to be my new go-to route. But here's the thing, though. So the reason why I think it's a little bit of a bummer is because, like, there are people who, these displays are great and you can keep them for so many years. And as long as they're working fine, which I've had one since day one, I've had the Pro Display XDR since day one. I don't ever plan on getting rid of that display. It's incredible. And we're going to get to that in a minute. But like, they're still so good. They can last me for, I feel, another 4 to 5 years, no problem. But everyone really wanted promotion. They wanted some upgrades. And because this doesn't get upgraded every year, I just thought it was a little bit of a bummer for those who are like, okay, I love my studio display. I want to get a second one to put in with this one. And I want to be able to at least spend the same price, maybe even a little less, hopefully, which wasn't going to happen. But you're not going to look at this as an upgrade. You're not going to do it. And if you want promotion, guess what? You can have it for an extra like $2,000 almost, because they launched a new version called the Studio Display XDR, which I guess is going to replace the Pro Display XDR, correct?
Yes, the Pro Display XDR has now been discontinued.
That is a bummer for many reasons. So really just two. And one of them, I guess, is, you know, we can live by. But there's no more 32-inch display. That kind of sucks. They should have made a 32-inch model for either one of these, at least. They did not. There's no 6K anymore, which when you're coming from 32 down to 27, it's fine. You're not going to notice that. You don't need that extra 1K resolution that you're getting. It was mostly to kind of help out with the screen real estate. So now that we're dropping down to 27, but those things go hand in hand. So you're losing resolution and you're losing the screen real estate, which kind of sucks. Now, the price does come down quite a bit. It starts at $32.99, right? I don't have the price in front of me, but I think that's what it starts at.
Yes.
And then I don't know why there is another version. Sorry, guys.
Well, you can configure.
You
want nanotextra.
That's it. Or, there's one that's more expensive.
Whether you want a VESA mount. There are always some configurable options with these displays.
It's the $35.99. $35.99 if you want nanotexture, and then that will remain the same if you there's no extra price for VESA and tilt height adjustable, which is nice. At least they gave us that one as the base option.
Well, we've come quite far from the Pro Display XDR's $999 pro stand. I do think it's a better product than the Pro Display XDR, which maybe is a controversial take. The Pro Display XDR was so expensive, especially when you added that Pro stand to it. While it's a great panel, I don't know that it's the best display I've ever seen. At the same time, it lacks everyday features like a web speakers.
Well,
which are
right, so that's
useful, and you are paying so much money for that.
This is where, like, as a Pro Display XDR user, the only thing that I'm really sad about is that it's not like I don't like the fact that one's 27 and one's 32, because I would just go to a dual display thing now. But I don't like the fact that they're going to be two different sizes. That's going to bother me. And traditionally, I am kind of a one display user, but when I'm going down in size, it might be kind of nice to have two. And I just wish they were going to be, this is a selfish thing. But so now I don't really know what to do with that, because you're right. In every other sense, it is a better display or a better monitor as a whole, because we are getting speakers, which is great. I can now take my monitors off the desk. Like, I don't need those speakers on my desk anymore. Unless you're trying to listen to music, in which case they're probably not going to be that great for that, but they're still going to be very much totally passable for just like casual listening, watching videos. They are good speakers, but I have two Sonos speakers that are like tied into, I made it work to as desktop speakers. So they're not going to beat that, but I don't need that. I basically just watch content on here and just edit video, and it's going to be totally fine. And so I can get my space back on my desk, which is nice. But like, you get the webcam. Every time I need to do any kind of video call, I jump over to this desk, which is where we do the podcast, completely different desk. And, you know, that's kind of frustrating. So it's nice that this is on there, or you have to buy a third party accessory, which they're not always great. So it's nice that you get that included. And then, you know, you still get the same Thunderbolt 5 ports that you get on the standard display. You get 140 watts of pass-through charging, which we didn't mention, but yeah, it has 2000 nits of brightness, and that's the peak brightness for HDR content. Yeah, it's going to be fine. And then, of course, you have 120 hertz with adaptive sync. So that's the thing that everybody is going to want. And that's a shame that you have to bump up to such a huge price tag to get that. You know, I wish there was another version.
Yeah.
Maybe make that one $2,000 and like at least let those people choose.
I think that I actually really like this product. I think it's great that we finally have a mini LED 120 hertz external monitor yeah. that actually will offer an equivalent experience to what we've been used to on the MacBook Pro for 5 years now. There's always been that difference before where you were aware that what you were looking at on the studio display is just not as good as what it is on the MacBook Pro. I'm glad yeah. we finally got there, but it does feel expensive, especially with the entry-level model. The studio display has always been expensive, but I would hope that by now, considering that these panels, these LCD panels, they've been basically the same since about 2014. Well over a uh-huh. decade, Apple has been putting these in iMacs and then in LG monitors and then in the studio display. We're very used to what these Retina quality displays look like. And it is so expensive when you bear in mind how much like a Mac Mini costs, that you may want to hook that up, need a monitor, it feels disproportionate. And I can't help but think that they could have got the price down on the entry-level studio display quite a bit more, and probably on the studio display XDR, they should have gone a little bit further so that someone who's buying a MacBook Pro could feel that it's accessible. Because you know, even for me, I don't upgrade my setup very often, and I tend to be quite considered about when I do that. Yeah. And I don't mind throwing money at that because I don't do it very often, and I want to get, you know, choose the right tools, the best experience. I spend a lot of time with these devices. But at that price point, I just think it's a lot. I mean, that's basically a Vision Pro just
yeah,
for the
it's
monitor.
Insane.
And I don't know that that's... It is that much better than the entry-level model. You're getting the same design, the same speakers. Okay, it's an A19 Pro chip instead of an A19, but that's not going to make any difference to anything with the display tangibly. And really, all you're getting is that mini LED panel with 120 hertz and 2,000 nits of brightness. I don't know that I care about the faster charging very much. And that is so much more money for a display that is better. But is it worth that much money? But I guess this is... Maybe I'm not the customer for this. This is maybe for people that are using it for professional purposes and actually need to edit HDR content. The other thing is that Apple's got exploring medical certification for this yeah. product as well, and wants to see it used in hospitals and medical environments where you need to be able to look at scans and look in very precise details to determine people's health outcomes. So I understand that if that's who this product is for, then a hospital is not going to be too worried about spending $3,500.
No, but I still think there was a way to put it. Didn't maybe need to be, I don't know. There are tons of monitors out there that are not mini LED that have 120 hertz, have 120 hertz capabilities. You could have figured out a way to make it into a cheaper version for those who maybe at least want that for the standard one. Because I do think that these displays, despite there being better specs on paper for significantly cheaper and in much larger sizes, I have still never seen, this isn't me being an Apple homer, I just have never seen a display out there that looks as good as these Retina quality ones that Apple makes. I'm sorry, they just don't. They don't work well with macOS. They always have issues in scaling and the proportions in order to achieve Retina quality. The only other one that wasn't an Apple branded monitor was the LG one, and Apple worked with them on that. So, I mean, that's the only other one. And then LG made their other ultrafines after that, and it has not looked the same. They do not work the same. There has been no 5K, no 6K monitors that have looked as good as the Pro Display and now the Studio Display and the Studio Display XDR. It just hasn't happened. So I'm going to continue to pay whatever price it is, unfortunately. I just wish there was a one that, you know, maybe people like you and others that aren't doing medical grade work or like in a production studio, I would certainly fall under that category. So like, I wish there was one that was a little bit in the middle between the standard and the Studio Display, which I'm going to keep calling Pro Display on accident. I realize this, but I'm sorry.
Yeah, me too.
Because it is a Pro Display in some cases. But I'm excited for it. Don't get me wrong. I mean,
I was very glad to see them updated. Yeah. You know, Apple's had a very tumultuous relationship with external monitors for years. For many years, we didn't have one. So it's kind of nice to see that its external displays are getting some love and getting some decent upgrades. And for me, I don't really have any issues with the hardware here. For me, it's just a price problem. I remember when you used to be able to buy a Thunderbolt monitor from Apple for $999, which felt expensive at the time, but it meant that if you bought a Mac Mini or a Mac Pro, whatever you wanted to buy at that time, you knew that you could buy an Apple quality monitor that was just plug and play and worked really well and looked nice on your desk for less than $1,000. Maybe we don't live in that world anymore, but I would like to think that with the Studio Display that maybe they could get it down to maybe $1,200, maybe $1,500. I would really like to see that.
Okay. The Studio Display, the standard one, it's a bummer because it's really not that interesting of an upgrade aside from the Thunderbolt 5 capability. I mean, everything else is like, okay, whatever, that's fine. I feel bad for those people who were like, okay, I've had this monitor for 4 years. I kind of wish we could get a little bit of an upgrade to it and keep it around the same price. I'd get a second one and use that, you know. The good news is you're saving yourself money. You have no reason to go out and get another one unless yours is broken. The other one's probably out of a lot of people's price range. I wish there was something in the middle. The one thing that I kind of wished was the at least the bonus upgrade is that, can we just get rid of this tilt-only stand for the standard one? Why? Why is that the only option? Why does that matter?
I wouldn't mind if, as I say, this is what it keeps coming back to for me. I wouldn't mind if they kept that stand if it was just a little bit more inexpensive.
Yeah, okay, fine. If it was like $12.99 and then $15.99 got you the height adjustable one, sure, totally understand. And you can make arguments until you're blue in the face. These monitors are much better constructed than any other ones out there. There are so many clones from Samsung and LG that make ones that look the same, but then when you get them, it's plastic, it's cheaper materials, and they're not the same. I'm sorry. And Apple has incredible engineering, and they go through. This is why these things cost more, but it's still a little ridiculous. But again, all of these products are great. I have no problems with it. I know we're bashing a lot of it. It's just mostly for your wallet that we're like concerned about.
Yeah, in this instance, it's a price issue, which purely. I don't think we're going to have with the next product.
Nope. And I was going to say, the best news is, though, and I have no issues with this next one. I mean, there's some things that I'm skeptical on, but like, I, as a joke yesterday, when they were going to announce, and this is the MacBook Neo, which name we need to get into as well, but I, as a joke, said, what if they came out and just made it $599? Because the rumors was $699, and then when the Air was launched and that was $100 more at $1,000, I'm like, oh, this could very well be $799 now, and that would really suck. That would take the whole Air out of this thing. I think it needs to be $699 at a minimum. I doubt they go less than that. If they go higher, I think that would really make things kind of a bummer for this. And then they came out and dropped a very good-looking machine, in my opinion. Very, like, suitable for nearly everyone that's looking at this. Like, there's no reason why you can't use this. There's no reason why I can't use this as, like, a travel laptop. I think I can do 85% of the things that I need to do on this thing. And it's $599. Like, that's crazy.
And $499 for education, which is
$499 for education, which I saw some people say that there was no verification process for that in the US. And I find that very hard to believe. Be honest, stand by your morals, pay the extra $100. But if you're a student, if you're going into school next year, you know, get that, jump on this. This is such a good deal. We got the brand new MacBook Neo. Do you want to start with going through the specs, or do you want to talk about the name? Because the name is interesting.
Let's do the specs first. So we've got the A18 chip in here, which is from the iPhone 16. We've got a 13-inch display, so that's slightly smaller than the MacBook Air. And we have this all-new design where it's much more rounded edges, more than any other MacBook that we've seen for many, many years. And we've got these bright, fun colors where even the keyboard has the same color, so it's a very different aesthetic. And it's got uniform bezels around the display, so there's no notch on there. Two USB-C ports, a 16-hour battery life, 8 gigabytes of memory, 1080p front-facing camera, and you've got dual mics and dual speakers, which support spatial audio. So you're really getting pretty much everything you need. And you can even add a Touch ID for an extra $100, which also doubles the storage, which I actually don't even think that's a hugely expensive upgrade.
No, I was going to say, that's what I would tell you to get. Just future-proof yourself, get yourself some storage, go 512, and then get Touch ID just for the added security. I don't know that I could not do Touch ID from a passwords perspective and like an Apple Pay perspective. Entering in my password is a freaking nightmare every time because it's one of those that was generated, so it's super long. Like, I just don't want to do that. So I personally, from a convenience standpoint, would just go ahead, bite the bullet, and you're also getting extra storage with it, so that's great. I do think that's a little weird that that's how they like separated that.
But it's to keep it easy, and it also just means like they're expecting to sell so many of these. It means that with all those color options, they can keep many in stock, especially with third-party retailers as well. Keeps it really straightforward. Just $100, do you want the extra stuff or not?
So what was the first thing that stuck out to me when I saw it? And I didn't realize this, but at first they showed, I think it was the pink one that came, that was the first one that I noticed. The keyboard looked white. And I'm like, oh my God, remember that MacBook that leaked a few years ago that was like, we were going to get this white bezel, matching white keyboard. That's what it reminded me of. I think that was like a rumored Air from a while ago. That would have been cool if that's what they did. And like, so it turns out the keyboard's not white. On the pink, because it's so subtle in typical Apple fashion, it's actually a color matched, a subtly colored matched version. So the keyboard is not white. It's like an off-whitish, got a pink hue to it. If you go with Citrus, which is the yellowish greenish option, that one also has a color matched, and same with Indigo, and then Silver is silver, but it, you know, that's kind of cool. It would have been cool if they put the bezels to be like the white, or at least color match might have looked interesting. I don't know. It definitely, people complain about the notch. Well, you don't have one here, but now you have some thick boy bezels. So you tell me which one you prefer. Personally, I think I would have preferred it to just go with the notch. I don't really care, but you know, keep costs down, make it look like it is different than some of the other higher end premium devices. I totally get it. It kind of looks like it would be plastic. I was at the event yesterday. It is not. It is, I don't know. I just really like it. And I know I'm not going to use this thing full time, but I want to use it because it's just new and somewhat exciting. I don't know. What are your thoughts on the overall feel and design?
I love it. I think it feels very fresh, very different. And at that price point, there's really very little to complain about. I mean, you see people on Twitter complaining, oh, it's only got 8 gigabytes of memory. And I feel like, well, until, not so long ago, that was the base amount of memory on most Macs that you could buy.
And what you needed for Apple Intelligence.
And also, Apple's memory management is very good in macOS. 8 gigabytes of memory will go quite far for the sort of user that will buy this. Are you going to be editing feature-length movies in Final Cut on this machine? Probably not. But
I'm going to try. Not feature-length.
Certainly, you will be able to actually get some work done on here.
Yeah.
And if this is your first Mac, or it's maybe an additional family Mac that you have, or it's something, maybe you have like a desktop Mac, you're a Mac Studio user, and you need something else for when you're traveling. At this price point, I mean, you're not paying a huge amount more than you would pay for an Apple Watch. It's an incredible price for what you're getting, in my opinion. And yes, it doesn't have everything. You know, there are some missing features here. There are things like you don't get MagSafe charging. There's no fast charging. There isn't a
trackpad.
Yeah, there's no haptic trackpad, so that won't feel as good. The trackpad's also a little smaller because the footprint of the device is smaller. It's got a 16-hour battery life, which is 2 hours less than the MacBook Air. You don't get a LED indicator on the webcam. It is a budget device, but you compare this to what else is available at that end of the market. On paper, you can get things in that price bracket with 16 gigabytes of RAM, but you're not going to get macOS. You're not going to get this build quality. And the fact is, this does upend the market. This will encourage PC manufacturers to offer a lot more, especially in terms of build quality and experience at that end of the market. I think it's going to be hugely popular. I think they're going to sell so well. I think we will see these things everywhere.
From a basic user standpoint, and even from a professional standpoint, for people like us and those who, I just think macOS is such a better I don't even think this is a crazy thing to say. It's damn near fact. It's such a better optimized platform for the hardware. It runs better. I have a Windows machine that I use here quite regularly for things. And like, I just don't love it. It doesn't work super well compared to just being on a Mac and having something. And this is a crazy build machine. It's like a gaming PC. So it's supposed to perform well and it's fine. But like, I can't imagine. I've used low-end laptops before, Windows laptops, and they're a nightmare. They're super slow. They take forever. It's not great. And like, this is going to blow a lot of that stuff out of the water. Even higher-end laptops that people use for enterprises and stuff like that is not going to perform as well, in my opinion. I just don't think it will. macOS is just a much better platform, despite some of its own shortcomings. I still think it's
because
better.
It's well optimized for Apple Silicon,
right?
And although this is not as powerful as the Studio Display of all devices, this is still a pretty recent chip. It's from the iPhone 16 Pro, and you should be able to do pretty much everything you want to. And because you've got macOS, you can certainly try. I mean, if you want to go ahead and run local AI tools and Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro and render 3D models all at the same time, you can certainly try on this machine. It won't like it very much, but you can do it.
Well, I don't even know if that's true either, because yesterday when I was walking around, they had a lot of like demos set up of things, you know, for each machine. And we're talking about it afterwards. We noticed that a lot of these machines had a ton of applications open. And it's not just like, you know, Safari and Pages and all that, but it was a lot of Safari tabs. It was a lot of various applications in, you know, there was Final Cut was open, a lot of the Creative Studio apps, Craft. They were showing us CraftDoc and how it runs on device AI processing for some of its features, and where it was able to do all of that and then swipe to the next desktop, and it had a bunch of other things going on. And I'm like, I don't even have this many stuff or this many applications open on my Mac Studio at this point. Like, I would probably start closing some things so that I'm not using up resource. And it seemed fine. It had no issues at all. I have to test it, so we'll see. Come back to me next week. But I'm very encouraged for this. And this is definitely not for the people that are probably listening to this, but you probably know people that would want this. Or maybe you are someone who would need this. It is going to be, like you said, a perfect family laptop. A perfect laptop if you just want something like, hey, when I'm on the road, like I just want something that has macOS, I can get my stuff done, but it doesn't need to be something crazy. And I've got a desktop at home for that kind of stuff, or a better laptop at home that I just keep there, then fine. Yeah, that'll be great. And if it breaks, you know, while you're traveling, or if it gets a little scuffed up, you're not that upset about it. For students, I saw a couple of comments that people who are IT managers for schools said kids hate Chromebooks because they're so slow. And I'm sure they're still a little bit cheaper, but maybe the schools, if they have the budget, can be like, you know what, if the kids are complaining and we're doing a lot of work on this, we can make our lives easier and get a whole fleet of these things for $499 or less. You know, maybe they buy in bulk, they get a supplier discount, who knows. That's a huge, huge improvement for those kids. And there's going to be a lot more capabilities and things that they can do on these machines now that you probably can't do on a Chromebook. So I'm excited. I might, honestly, after I'm done reviewing it, let my family kind of go wild on it, because they've really never used a computer before. They're either like iPad kids, or they have, actually, yeah, even for school, they don't even use Chromebooks yet. They use iPads. So my son's been kind of into editing. He edits videos on his iPad using iMovie. I think it would be kind of nice to like let them explore that a little more on a desktop and see what it's like to do a little bit more. And yeah, I'm excited for it. I think my wife looked at it and was like, ooh, I want the pink one. She's never said that about any laptop ever. So,
but it just,
I think the color certainly helped.
I know you said we'd mentioned the name, but I think this is where it kind of comes into it, which is it's just a cool machine. It looks cool. It feels fresh. The colors are nice. It feels different. And I guess that is why they've gone for this name, MacBook Neo. This is not just a MacBook, which I think was the name we were maybe expecting. But that, I think, maybe would have fallen a little bit flat. This is something that does feel pretty different to anything that we've seen Apple do with the Mac before. This really does feel like a fun device. I don't know. So we've had stuff before, like the entry-level iPad when it got those fun color options a few years ago. And yeah, that was fine. But this, there's something about the character of this device that has a sort of playful nature. And at that price point, you kind of just think, it doesn't matter if I don't use it. I just kind of want to buy it. And with those soft edges, it looks like you probably shed some light on this, but it looks super tactile. Looks like it would be a fun device just to own, which I don't know that this feels like an Apple product that would have come out 15 or 20 years ago. We don't seem to say that a lot anymore about Apple devices. We don't really seem to say that they have a lot of fun, but this device seems like it evokes that feeling, which is really nice to see.
I don't know where we're going to be at in like 30 years, but this kind of seems like the product, like, because it, people reference the iBooks that were similar to this back in the 90s that came out that were fun and colorful. And now, like, I don't know if I have one of those, but like, we have some of those fun, colorful machines. They don't work. I just use them like they're in the background. It's just nice to own and look at and be reminded of like what that Apple history was like. This machine could very well be that for us in 30 years that we're like, you remember the Neo? Like, that was fun. It's like the 5C all over. Remember the 5C? Yeah. That's kind of what it is. It's like the max version of the 5C. It's perfect for those people who need this kind of stuff. It's fun. It's cool. Maybe we'll get some of those weird perforated cases. I don't know. Something for the accessories. But like, that's what it reminds me of. And Neo literally means new and like revived. And so, yeah, I mean, that's what they did. I also wonder if this is what the new MacBooks, the MacBook Pros, are going to kind of take form, in a more premium way, obviously, since you're going to be spending a lot more cash for the TouchBook OLED ones. Do you think that's kind of the design that it's going to be? Because we heard it's going to be redesigned.
I don't know. I think that where the MacBook Pro is supposedly going to be getting thinner, I don't know that they will be able to achieve that kind of rounded silhouette. And I think that also psychologically and from a marketing perspective, this MacBook is meant to look fun and friendly and inviting. The MacBook Pro, by contrast, should look aggressive and powerful. I think it's probably going to lean more into that. But I really have no complaints about this product. I don't even need one, and I feel like I want one.
Well, yeah, that's the joy of my job. I don't need one. I wouldn't buy one, but I'm glad that I'm going to get one because I get to use it. And we'll see
what color it holds up.
I went with indigo, but man, I do like I like them all, honestly. The silver one does, that's so boring too. The silver one does look like it would complement my Pro right now, it would look right nice next to each other. I also wanted to go for the citrus.
iPhone 17 Pro you're showing us.
Ooh, maybe.
So it's not an orange iPhone 17 Pro.
I retired the orange for a little bit, all right?
So someone who said that they, for literally years, that they wanted an orange iPhone.
I used it for a long time. This was a recent switch. I would say 2 weeks it's been. Ask me why. I don't know. I just wanted to change it up. Now, I would have been sick if they would have made an orange version of this MacBook. I would have been all over it. I was almost about to get the citrus, but then I went indigo. I went safe. I don't know why.
The indigos are, they're all great colors. They feel pretty different to anything that we've had before. Apple's clearly very into pink right now. We got the pink iPhone 17e, the pink MacBook Neo. Pink is clearly doing well for Apple right now.
I guess. Yeah, I can see that. I mean, not that men can't like pink, but I think that that's probably a go-to for a lot of the female clients that will be buying this. So I honestly really liked it. I would do that too. I think they're all fine. It's exciting. It's cool. It's $599. You can't hate on Apple for that. There are a couple things that are questionable. The trackpad, when I found out that that was not the same, I was like, oh, I touched it. I clicked around on it. It's fine. It's weird to have a trackpad on a Mac that physically presses in now. That's not something that we've had for a while, but it hasn't been that long. So it's fine. The other thing is the speakers. So if you look on the side, there's two USB-C ports, two USB-C ports, a 3.5 millimeter headphone jack. And then on the left and right side, there are two side firing speakers. And my first thought is there is no way in hell those things sound good. I obviously couldn't test it. There was like 200 people there yesterday. It was very loud. That was not going to happen. I can't wait to try that to see, because Apple does claim that it does come with spatial audio. I don't know how. They look like very teeny speaker. Like they would sound like a tin can. Like it would be like your iPhone, basically.
I mean, Apple does great audio hardware. So
yes, they do.
I'm less worried about that. I think what's maybe more questionable is the difference between the USB-C ports. So although you've got two USB-C ports, one is a USB 3.
Yeah, but do you think the people that are buying this are going to know or care?
Many won't, but there are instances in which they will care. So if you plug in even something like a USB 3.1 thumb drive, if you plug that into the slower ports, the USB 2 port, the data transfer speed on that is going to be painfully slow. And also, if you want to hook it up to an external monitor, you plug it into the wrong port, it just won't work because only one of these ports supports DisplayPort. And macOS will tell you if you've plugged into the wrong port, but it's not the end of the world. I still think it's a great product. It's worth noting that that is a limitation. And ultimately, that's because it's got an iPhone chip in it. And probably next year we'll get a second generation MacBook Neo that will have an A19 chip in it, and they'll have found a way to give it two USB 3 ports, and this will be a forgotten problem.
I think that's the thing, but also, like I said, I don't know that most of the people that are going to be buying this are going to either hook up an external display at all, to be honest with you. And I don't know how many do people use a lot of thumb drive? I feel like everything's cloud-based now. Like I'm just thinking like standard student.
It's true. I don't think the majority of customers that buy this will care, but undoubtedly some of them will want to hook it up to an external monitor, and some will want to transfer data at some point. So it is worth noting.
So you might need to buy like a little dock.
There's just no difference between those ports externally, so you can't tell. But these are the trade-offs that Apple's had to make to deliver that price. And because they've succeeded in doing that, really, even none of these limitations have any complaints from me. I don't think any of this makes a material difference with the sort of people that are going to buy this device and love it. I'm pretty sure if I do eventually buy one, I think I'm going to love it as well and find a good use for this device alongside my desktop setup.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing for me would be just knowing which port. I'm guessing it's the top one. That'll be the one that can do the most. So just knowing that if I plug in an SSD, because I use external SSDs for those laptops that don't have a lot of storage. So when I'm editing content, like that's it. I just got to know which one to put it in. But I don't ever really use external monitors with my laptops. Laptops remain laptops for me. So I wonder for those, you know, who are listening, if you're planning on buying one, are these limitations that big of a deal? I feel like you're probably going to be in the minority. It's mostly the Gen Pop, the people that are going to be just buying this to be their machine to get stuff done. Think of it as like, well, this is the other thing. The iPad Air is like $599 too. Who should buy that? Unless you really want a touch input device and something that is that form factor, I cannot recommend to not get a MacBook at that point. Like you just got to get the Neo.
I agree. And even if you buy the entry level iPad and add the Magic Keyboard Folio to that and the Apple Pencil, I mean, that gets expensive. I actually think, and don't quote me on this, but I think that makes it more expensive than the MacBook Neo, which is pretty crazy.
Absolutely. They both start at the same price, don't they?
I'm not 100% sure about that.
I'm going to check right now, but I know for a fact the iPad Air, I believe, starts at $599. They're both at $599.
But I'm also referring to the entry-level iPad. I think if you add the keyboard to gets more expensive than the MacBook Neo. But either
Let
way,
me tell you.
I personally would never really encourage someone who wants to get work done to buy an iPad over a MacBook. But I appreciate that that's also maybe a generational thing. And there are plenty of Gen Alpha people that have grown up using tablets and are much more used to touch interfaces. And really, like you say, with your family, people that don't use a proper computer and are far more used to using iPads, those kind of people probably are not going to be so worried about that, are going to feel a lot more comfortable in a touch environment.
Absolutely.
So these products are for different people. It's easier for us to kind of be Mac snobs and think, well, we love the Mac and we can't understand other people choosing an iPad over a Mac. But there are plenty of people who, I don't know, maybe they want to do so. They love the Apple Pencil and they want to do some digital illustration. They want to take handwritten notes when they're off at college alongside writing their essays up with the keyboard. And the Mac's not going to allow them to do that. Or maybe they're switching from a touchscreen laptop and that touchscreen capability is really important to them. So they decide to opt for an iPad. There are plenty of reasons, not least, of course, that the iPad Air is a huge amount more powerful than this. So if you were wanting to go into content creation and you did want to do a lot of video production, and what actually mattered was your ability to export and render content quickly, it probably you would be better off on the iPad Air if we're not being prejudiced around platform.
That would be a good test, because the iPad Air, like, I might need to do that test, because it might save you some time from a export perspective. But if you're not somebody who's used to using Final Cut Pro on the iPad, it will slow you down. So you're going to be significantly slower doing that work on the iPad than you would on your Mac. So, like, which one's the bigger deal for you? Like, I'd rather be able to just edit faster and then just hang on a minute and do other things while it's exporting in the background.
And I still think those users will be in the minority. Sure. And I still think the majority of people would prefer to have a proper Mac. And the fact is, now you can do that. I think this product is going to be so popular. One of the most popular Apple products we've seen for years, and will eclipse iPad sales massively.
Here's the thing on the iPad. It is almost the same price. It's not more expensive, but it's about the same price if you get the 12th gen or the 11th gen iPad. We didn't get a 12th gen iPad. We were supposed to. If you get the iPad standard one with the keyboard folio, it's just my kids might be one of those people who are going to be like, I just rather get this instead of a MacBook Neo. But knowing that it's not good enough value for what you're getting is going to drive me insane. Yes, you prefer to use it and that's fine. We're going to have to let that go. But like the value, you could get a better machine personally from an operating standpoint. You can do so much more on this. That'll be the frustrating part. But be interesting to hear everybody's thoughts. This very well could have been a real event and they could have just talked about all of these for a little bit, or at least done one of those. Yeah, it was cool. Any thought to John Ternus being the guy that was out at the New York event?
Well, I think this just continues the trend. We're seeing more and more of him, and that's for good reason.
Yeah. John was the one who came out for us in New York. I don't remember who the other two people were in London, and where was the other one at?
Shanghai.
It was just, I knew he was going to come out. I just kind of had a feeling because there was a stage. I was like, maybe Tim Cook, but he couldn't be bothered for this. These devices are beneath him. Although the Neo is an important thing. I think it's a good step forward. And it's going to certainly sell like crazy. And if it doesn't, I'm going to be shocked, honestly.
Yeah, me too.
But yeah, let us know, and we'll catch everybody in next week's episode.